Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Now get two sausage McMuffin with egg sandwiches for just $5. That's right, $5. And with many locations opening at 5 a.m. or earlier, your morning starts when you do. Order ahead on the app, skip the wait, and grab your breakfast on your schedule. It's mornings made better at McDonald's. Price and participation may vary. Must opt into rewards.
Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolocumab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
The issue of assisted dying was debated at length before the Oireachtas Justice Committee decided that so-called dying with dignity, the bill, was not fit for purpose. But my next guest says that we need to revisit the idea of allowing assisted dying and that we need to have a conversation about the way we manage death in Ireland. Dr. Brendan O'Shea is Kildare-based general practitioner and assistant professor for public health and primary care at Trinity College in Dublin, and he joins me now. Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning.
Now, a conversation about this, people would say, you know, we have had that conversation, we've come to a conclusion, so let's not revisit it. Why do you want to have that conversation again?
Well, I think it's evident to a lot of us who are in practice that in key respects we do very well with dying in Ireland, but not always. And I think most of us who are in general practice see from time to time that some deaths are still particularly very difficult. So the main reason to continue to have this conversation, well, partly the Joint Committee on Justice recommended that there should be a further committee to examine the topic of assisted dying. So the government have decided that the conversation isn't closed. But in day to day, while many people have good deaths, a significant proportion of people continue to have very difficult deaths. And those of us who are in practice would be of the view that there is a need, really, for people in Ireland to have the choice of assisted dying in certain circumstances.
Yeah.
That's why we're still here.
Okay. Now, I was under the impression, rightly or wrongly, that when people are in terrible pain, that physicians are entitled to give them as much morphine, for example, as will relieve their pain, even if that accelerates the process of dying.
This is the principle of double effect, and it's kind of all right, but it does depend on individual circumstances, and it depends on the doctor who's mainly treating you. And some of us are of the view that probably this isn't good enough, that the right to assisted dying, well, actually should be a right under given circumstances. So it's a question of improving the situation. Across Ireland, we are very lucky. A lot of areas have brilliant palliative care. Some areas do not have their own palliative care services, and this is a separate pressing issue. But we're looking at all patients. And for most patients, what you're saying probably works reasonably well. But we would also be of the view that we're not having enough conversations with people as they approach their end of life, which is usually a predictable event. And we also know, and the evidence strongly supports, that even with best palliative care, there's a significant proportion who experience very significant distressing symptoms despite optimal palliative care. How many are we looking at? We understand from countries in where this service is available, about 10% of people who are dying give close consideration to it. And of that 10%, typically about 2 to 4% will choose to avail of the service where it's available. And we're looking at places like Canada, we're looking at the Netherlands, we're looking at Australian states, we're looking at some of the US states, we're looking at Austria. An increasing number of countries have this as a choice for people who are approaching end of life.
Our most similar country, our nearest neighbour, does not.
No, but they're... ongoing debate on it. They've also had some difficult experiences. And if we go back 3 or 5 years to what I think was known as the Liverpool pathway, there was a serious consideration and reflection on it. So for a lot of societies, this is an ongoing issue. The Joint Committee on Justice are correct in recommending that we should move towards a committee to examine it further. But they decided that just over a year ago. So we're very glad to be on air this morning, seeing what people think. Do they see this as relevant to themselves? Do they see it as relevant to anybody in their own network who deceased recently? Could it have been made better? Might this have been relevant for them?
Now, in 2021, there was a Canadian law on assisted suicide which contained a provision that would allow doctors to provide assisted suicide to the psychiatrically ill.
This is a really important issue. And again, I think that the recommendation from the Joint Committee on Justice is really, really very good. We need to have a closer conversation about what's right for people who are dying in Ireland. Healthcare is complex, and the ethicality around dying is particularly complex and really important. So what have we got here? We have our daily experience in practice where every couple of years, most GPs will have a situation where there will be a very difficult set of circumstances where medical assistance in dying might be relevant. We're probably talking about several hundred people dying in the country each year. What else have we got? We have the experiences and the documented experience of health systems where this has been available for people as a choice for 10 or 20 or even 30 years. So we need to look at that evidence and see what works for us here. We're not going to find a one size fits all. I think we need to be pragmatic about that. I'm in practice in Kildare. In Kildare, several hundred good citizens of Kildare die each year. And for most of them, they do very, very well. We have really a brilliant local palliative care service. We're one of the counties which does have a palliative care service. But we and for many people, this won't be relevant. But there's an important minority of probably 2 to 4% of all people dying. There are 35,000 people die a year approximately, so that's several hundred, for whom this is important. And we think it's worthwhile. We think the Justice Committee is right about this.
Now, the question of consent. I mean, if you've got someone who's sound in mind, although physically in terrible distress, and they make a decision, knowing that there's no remedy, perhaps, you know, the for some conditions, there might be terrible distress, but a remedy and even a treatment or cure might be eventually available. But for those who can consent to this kind of thing and say, yes, I want you to ease my pain, and if that means my premature demise, so be it. But then there'll be others who are not in a position to make decisions for themselves, who may have bestowed enduring power of attorney on somebody. And, you know, it could be you're looking at someone who's in such severe dementia and therefore in mental as well as physical distress. And someone has to make a decision tell a doctor you should end it all and end it now.
Well, tracking back, it's probably better and safer if several people are involved in the decision rather than one individual. I'd emphasise what I've already said. We're not going to find one easy size fits all. We will find almost certainly that there, for the majority of the 2 to 4%, they do fall into categories that where there is better clarity. Let's get personal. I'm drifting into my 60s. I have a reasonable idea what might happen to me in the next 20 years. I know, for example, not as Brendan O'Shea doctor, but as Brendan O'Shea citizen, that if, say, for example, and I'm being personal about it, if I get metastatic prostatic cancer, and if I can't do most of my functions for myself, and if I have significant pain, I would then want my GP to be able to assist me with medical assistance in dying. That's the best that I can say today, thinking about it. And in clinical care, in most situations, most deaths are predictable. And this can be considered as an option. And we know that once it becomes considered as an option in a society, we know that typically about 2 to 4% of people take up this option. That is a fairly standard proportion across the systems where it's been brought in.
What safeguards, Brendan, are there in those other systems to make sure that the process is not abused? You know, once granny goes, there's an inheritance coming down the track. I could do with that money now.
These are very important considerations. Let's look at some of the systems. Let's go to the Dutch system, and particularly the way the service is largely provided in Holland and the Netherlands. Typically, the conversation is initially had with the person's GP. The GP is usually considered in many health systems, including our own, as the doctor who probably but not always, has longer knowledge and better knowledge of the individual and their family circumstances. If the individual formulates the request, the doctor will usually have a conversation with another doctor in the practice. If they have any significant doubts between themselves, there is a panel of external doctors who will look at the circumstances. If the process is going to proceed, other people are notified. The local police station, for example, is notified that it's likely that there will be a death in the community. A date is determined, and often in the Netherlands, there's a culture around the living wake. People meet with their families before they decide to proceed with it. The GP arrives often in the individual's house, usually in their own house. The ambulance service is involved to set up an IV line. GPs don't need people to set up IV lines, but it's the concept of another service being involved, which is protective of one doctor developing an abnormal pattern of practice. So, like I say, multiple agencies are involved. Mm. So that's how it actually works in the Netherlands. Now, there are aspects of every system that we might like, and there are aspects of every system that we don't like. But what we're saying is there was a lot of interest in the Dying with Dignity Bill. Technically, it was felt to be flawed. The Joint Committee on Justice has recommended that we need to continue having this conversation. We're supportive of that. I'm a member of Irish Doctors Supporting Medical Assistance in Dying. We have a website. There's over 100 of us active on it. We feel that it is important, not for most of our patients, but we believe that there's a very important minority. We could become among them ourselves, for whom it actually is important. It is difficult and tricky. We're not bad at difficult, tricky things. Really, we're asking to have this conversation.
Now, two things. One is about people who believe that assisting their own death is morally wrong, and that's maybe something with religious implications. And they, I suppose you're talking about a small number of people who would eventually take this course would be those who do not have that sense of it being morally wrong in some way. But it does bring back that whole agenda. I remember when I started broadcasting, there were the four areas that were illegal: contraception, divorce, abortion, and euthanasia. And even as we went through the liberalization of our society through contraception and divorce and ultimately abortion, it was often thought that, well, euthanasia or mercy killing is a place we will never get to.
That's a very elegant way of summarizing it. That quartet of ethical dilemmas is what they are. But we are where we are now, and we are amazingly fortunate in the country that we are living ever longer. We are medically more complicated. The science has moved on. The research around this has moved on. And the legislation, arguably, there's a need to consider legislation around this. I know that whatever we decide won't be perfect, but we really must hope that for those individuals who are in very difficult circumstances, and they are a minority, but they're an important minority, that they would have this as a choice, and that we can set it up, we can administrate it, we can have clinical governance around it, and we'll review it. Rather like the termination of pregnancy, it is currently being reviewed in a major way. And so let's be guardedly optimistic about it. Let's be selfish about it. And again, I've outlined what might happen to any of us, what might happen to me. I know personally that I don't want to be with a high level of disability, very dependent on the people that I love, and suffering. I don't want that for myself. Now, I might change my mind when the time comes around, but let's look at it from a personal perspective, let's look at it from a health service perspective, and let's look at it from a societal legislative perspective.
Now, I'll read you some of the comments coming in. As a nurse who nursed people during palliative care, it is the best safe practice in Ireland. I've seen pressures put on consultants by nurses and doctors to push patients onto palliative care pathway too soon. Their view is for compassion, but usually the patient is in full care, requires a lot of needs that a hospital simply cannot provide. I've seen abuse in the current system. One thing about the conversation with death is that still in Ireland, death is treated merely as a medical issue, and there's no support available for families or the individual themselves to reflect on the profound nature of what is happening psychologically, emotionally, and spiritually. When my own father was dying, the information was scant and there was little support beyond treating him like a car that could not be fixed. Of course, hospitals have a chaplain, but this is not suitable for everybody. It would be helpful, for example, for families to know and understand the stages of death, such as not eating, drinking, death rattle, etc. When there is no support, the whole experience feels so cold and medical. In relation to the assisted dying bill, surely it's also a case of bodily autonomy. In 2018, the Irish public voted to repeal the Eighth Amendment using the slogan, "My body, my choice." Surely this is as clear-cut an issue. That being said, there will be shades of grey where it will have to be on a case-by-case basis, such as in cases of dementia. And a final one, Fiona says, our family experience of Ireland's hospitals has been that our presence was important to ensuring our loved ones were adequately cared for. So many people have no family to advocate for them, so they should be allowed leave a living will to allow for assisted dying, so says Fiona. Brendan, you've started a very interesting conversation, and I thank you very much for joining us. Dr. Brendan O'Shea, Kildare GP and Assistant Professor for Public Health and Primary Care at Trinity College Dublin. Thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
My uncontrollable movements called TD, tardive dyskinesia, felt embarrassing. I felt like disconnecting. I asked my doctor about treating my TD and learned about Ingrezza, a prescription medicine clinically proven for reducing TD in adults. That's always one capsule, once daily, and number one prescribed. People taking Ingrezza can stay on most mental health meds.
Ingrezza can cause depression, suicidal thoughts, or actions in patients with Huntington's disease. Call your doctor if you become depressed, have sudden behavior or mood changes, or suicidal thoughts. Don't take Ingrezza if allergic. Serious side effects may include allergic reactions like sudden, potentially fatal swelling and hives, sleepiness, the most common side effect, and heart rhythm problems. Know how Ingrezza affects you before operating a car or dangerous machinery. Report fever, stiff muscles, or problems thinking, as these might be life-threatening. Shaking, stiffness, drooling, and trouble with moving or balance may occur.
Take control by asking your doctor about Ingrezza.
Learn more at Ingrezza.com. That's Ingrezza.com.